Okay, so yes, the expanded notion of public art, which is our topic today, of course, has a specific historical genesis, and we could say art historical genesis, which relates to a famous essay about sculpture in the expanded field by an American art historian, Rosalind Krauss, that at a specific moment of modernism tried to define what an expanded notion of sculpture could be. And according to Krauss, traditionally sculpture was very simply defined as something not being landscape and something not being architecture. And this led to a very elaborate discussion, and saying if you say that it's not landscape and not architecture, you can also see it as landscape or as architecture. And this led to try and develop a number of new tools called mark sites, sculpture, axiomatic structures, and site construction, which were all really a kind of certain dematerialization, perhaps, and debasement of the traditional notion of sculpture. But without looking at the object of sculpture itself as public art, we can of course also look at the very notion of what a public is. And this is perhaps some of the things we will be discussing today. Traditionally, of course, a public artwork very simply means the installation of an artwork in public space. So that's something presumably outside, or perhaps in an atrium, but it's works that are supposed to be distinguished from art that's in the private sphere, which is circulating and sold through galleries, and it's supposed to be different from, say, museums, even though museums principally are public spaces, of course. But this entails a very different audience, and perhaps a very different conception of what spectatorship an audience means. And usually means that a public artwork is involved in a quite heavy debate that takes place as much before the placement of the work as after. So there's all sorts of hearings, discussions, what can be placed, where, how can it be placed, how long should it be there, etc. So there's a long political and planning process. Basically it's a question of what can be installed where and for whom. What, how, and for whom, we could say. In the modernist period that Rosalind Krauss was somewhat also critiquing, these questions were of course deceptively simple. There was the idea that there was a synthesis between the abstract forms of sculpture or public work and the abstract forms of architecture, or abstract but modernist forms of architecture, creating a specific matrix that created a smooth space, uniform space, with equal access for all subjects in society, and subjects here defined as citizens, terms of citizenship. Such an idea of the public has of course been much discussed and criticized. And this formation that it should be a uniform space that we all enter, leaving behind our private interests in a kind of rational critical debate, is what has also been termed the bourgeois public sphere. Since then we have had many types of criticism of this idea of the public sphere, mainly focusing around a notion of fragmentation and a notion of experience. And by experience, here I'm referring to Oscar Neck and Alexander Kluge's famous book, Public Space and Experience, from the early 1970s, where they criticized the kind of bourgeois notion of the public sphere as a uniform space by saying our experiences totally counter this idea. We don't experience spaces as being equal, as having equal access, as having equal rights to speech and so on and action. Rather, we often experience spaces as closed. Secondly, it's impossible to make a separation between so-called private and public spaces. Rather, we should have a kind of spatial analysis of the discourses, production of subjectivity, etc., that goes on in any given space. So, for instance, what does it mean to look at the factory or the educational facility as a public space? What kind of rules, what kind of subjectivities, what kind of possibilities for speech acts are installed there? And secondly, as was also one of the main major goals of feminism in the 1970s, we should look at the most private of private spaces, the home, as a kind of public space, in the sense that it's a space that circulates power, structure, subjectivity, and is very related to work, and so on. So the very notion of experience has partly deconstructed and reconstructed our very notion of what a public space is. Secondly, of course, we will no longer really talk of one public sphere. We'd rather have to talk of a number of spaces or spheres that are overlapping, sometimes in contrast to each other, sometimes in conflict, but other times perhaps in a sort of unity. And this is what very famously also has been called a notion of publics and counter-publics. Understood in the way that every kind of public space is an imaginary space, but with real effects. So it's any kind of public like this one, for instance today, is structured around very simple principles. Namely that it's self-organized, that someone has organized it, and that you are all eligible for being part of the public simply by showing up. So you are my public, and we'll be the public today because you're here. And the minute you leave this room, you're no longer the public, in this case. Secondly, it exists only through mode of address. So a specific mode of address, like this one, talking behind a podium, is a way of situating you as a public. And it's a way to situate my speech or knowledge in a very specific way. And this is perhaps one of the most traditional ways of public speaking, is standing behind this podium, talking to you today. So there is always an imaginary idea that one tries to produce one's public in the very moment of enunciation. And this is of course something that has very large implications for artistic production, as we will talk about today, because artistic production is always already of course involved in various modes of address, in various modes of imagining a specific public through its very forms. But what does it mean then if there's no longer one uniform space where you can intervene with your artwork? Yeah? If you had a certain specific public space structured along fairly simple rules, it's also very easy to imagine interventions pro and contra this space. And pro would often be what has been perhaps termed club art, which means taking a sculpture produced in a studio and putting it in a public square. This notion, of course, is not the only one, but as we will see, there's many other strategies, many other notions of defining a public. But since there's not one public, but rather a number of specific publics, it means that your interventions, your mode of address, will be contextually very different according to the public that you imagine, the public that you try to intervene with or construct. And here I'm not only thinking in material terms from the difference between internet, television, or a public square, but also perhaps in any constitution of constituency or community, as opposed to merely audience. What exactly is a specific community, and what does it mean that a work, as public works, normally have to be, in the notion of politicians and bureaucrats, accessible for all, but rather accessible for some. So not for all the people all the time, but for some people some of the time. And secondly, as something that's perhaps also what producing what the political theorist Jean-Jean Mouffe has called an agonistic public sphere, which is a public sphere that is not trying to reach consensus, but rather is around a notion of an everlasting agonism, is around conflict, is a way of diffusing conflicts in society through having them play out in an agonistic, non-consensual way. So what does it mean then if artworks, and here of course we often think of things that are very controversial, often they're involuntary controversial, but what does it actually mean? What are the possibilities for artwork in existing in a kind of agonistic, debatable way? And what does this mean for your conceptions of democracy? Okay, so I think that will be it for now, and I will leave them for the first speakers, which will be Superflex, Copenhagen-based artist collective.